The CNBC app. Global market news in one place. Customizable sections and personalized alerts. Stocks tracking, interactive charts and market insights all in your hands. Stay connected. Stay informed. Download the CNBC app today.
Good morning. Welcome to Squawk Box. We are live from London and Rotterdam. Here are your headlines today. Tesla shares defy gravity despite a massive miss on both the top and bottom line, as the EV giant's boss, Elon Musk, dangles more affordable options in front of investors.
We've updated our future vehicle lineup to accelerate the launch of new models ahead of previously mentioned start of production in the second half of 2025. So we expect it to be more like the early 2025, if not late this year.
U.S. equities power higher, with the S&P 500 seeing its best day since February as investors shake off rate concerns. Oaktree Capital's Howard Marks tells CNBC the days of easy money are gone.
And my thesis is we're not going back there to rates of zero or a half or one. I think that that is an unnecessary stimulus, and I don't think permanent stimulus is a good thing. I think that interest rates should most of the time be set by the free market.
Kering warns profits could plunge as much as 45% in the first half. This comes as the luxury giant books double-digit sales declines in the first quarter. And the U.S. Senate overwhelmingly passes $95 billion in aid to Ukraine, Israel and Taiwan, sending the bill to the president's desk for signing.
After more than 6 months of hard work, many twists and turns in the road, America sends a message to the entire world. We will not turn our back on you.
Class here at the World Energy Congress, warnings that capital and geopolitical risk could obstruct the race towards renewables. The CEO of RVA telling me that green transitions could face a cost crunch.
Where administration is blocking investments, we need to speed up. But on certain things, we also need to slow down a bit because supply chain is not where it needs to be. Currently, we have very tight supply of any clean technology. And if we go too fast, it will become very expensive.
One of the big Magnificent Seven stocks that's been underperforming, certainly in focus for investors overnight, is Tesla. Investors blew through a red light after the bell, sending shares in the world's most valuable automaker higher by double digits after CEO Elon Musk told investors that production of new affordable EV models could begin sooner than expected. That was despite a first quarter release that fell short of Wall Street's expectations, with declines across the board. Revenue missed, profit missed, earnings per share missed. It is the first time the firm has posted three straight top and bottom line misses in a row, with revenue short of analyst estimates by the widest margin since April 2019. Investors appeared, though, to focus on one line in particular from the company's shareholder deck, hinting that new models could come sooner than expected. It does follow speculation that Tesla was shifting its focus away from new, more affordable models, or one model in particular, to a much vaunted robo-taxi, prompting downgrades from analysts, including Deutsche Bank, who said such a pivot would be thesis-changing for the stock. Speaking on the earnings call, Musk explained when customers may be able to get their hands on the new range.
We've updated our future vehicle lineup to accelerate the launch of new models, so we expect it to be more like the early 2025, if not late this year. These new vehicles, including more affordable models, will use aspects of the next generation platform, as well as aspects of our current platforms, and will be able to be produced on the same manufacturing lines as our current vehicle lineup. So it's not contingent on any new factory or massive new production line. It'll be made on our current production lines much more efficiently.
Investors will be watching to see whether Tesla can stick to that timeline. In the meantime, they can also get to some of the fundamentals to digest. Net income and operating margin both fell by more than half on the year, while global inventory nearly doubled in the space of a quarter. Plus, there is little visibility on what exactly these new affordable models will be. But Elon Musk told investors focusing too much on cars is the wrong approach.
I think, you know, Cathy Wood said it best, like, really, we should be thought of as an AI robotics company. If you value Tesla as just like an auto company, you just have to fundamentally, it's just the wrong framework. And it will come to be. If you ask the wrong question, then the right answer is impossible.
So what we're dealing with here, more information. The question mark is what's already priced in. I mentioned the Magnificent Seven stocks at the start. It's been one that's been left out thanks to some of the selling that's taken place. But the reality is the marketplace has changed. The EV adoption is not as fast as it was. Yep. Interest rates, higher interest rates have caught up with some consumers. And when it comes to the backdrop there, we've got more competition than ever before coming out of China. Plus, you've got big automakers elsewhere trying to gear up and get back into the game and pivot away from the traditional ICE engines. What Tesla's doing here and what it's communicating, two big question marks for me. New models, are we just getting tweaks to existing models? It was something that Elon Musk was not willing to clarify. Just exactly what those models look like, where they fit into the market, if it's going to bring anything new to Tesla. So that model issue is all dominant. I think that's what the market reacted to as well, hopes that there is something coming. But for me, the other point is robo-taxis. There is a huge amount that Elon Musk is now hanging on the future of autonomous vehicles in a different form, that being robo-taxis. Is it going to work? I mean, has he crossed off on the safety issues? What's the demand going to look like?
Yeah.
To me, you wonder whether the company gets valued on the same metrics around robo-taxis as it has been around electric vehicles.
Yeah, just having heard just commentary as well from some other analysts speaking about how Waymo's vehicles are already out there and they're seeing those vehicles perhaps come in, and perhaps there's more data points for Tesla. So who knows, the robo-taxi may certainly help, but that's not necessarily something that happens in the next year, 2 years, possibly even three or four, right? So what happens in the meantime for Tesla then when it comes to their top line especially, right? That's one element. So that's robo-taxis on one. When it comes to just the last comment that he actually just put forward there with regards to saying that we should not be viewed as an AI, as an electric vehicles company or as a vehicles company, and really as an AI robotics company. So if that is the case, why then put out a vehicle that is supposed to cost less, right? Why put in a more cost-effective vehicle to the market? Because that's still a vehicle, right? You're still putting out the vehicle. That is your primary mode of manufacturing. That is what brought you to market. And yes, you have the other technological aspects that have been brought forward for your business, but the primary thing here is that you make cars that have technological innovation, including electric vehicle parts to it as well.
We may be being too short-sighted here, and what I have seen at Tech Cycles is that if you are a disruptor, eventually you get disrupted yourself.
Yep.
So perhaps the fact that he's fast moving in a new direction, maybe that works. So that is a big question mark around the future, but I agree with you, this stage, it is a game changer from what we've all known as, you know, around Tesla stock. Compare and contrast, General Motors out yesterday as well.
Also, yeah.
And it was fascinating. Three big takeaways for me, which I think have ramifications for Tesla. Trimming its bets on robo-taxis. So just as we talk about Elon Musk doubling down, GM going in the opposite direction, trimming those bets.
Could that also provide Elon Musk with more competitive edge? Because that's what some people are saying as well.
Maybe, but you know, this is a company that has been huge in mobility for years.
Yeah.
And if it is now trimming its bets, what is it saying about profitability in the cycle it sees at this stage? The other one, rare loss in China. It has been bankable for many years for GM, but competition is coming through so quickly. So it is seeing that traditional background for its earnings driver be upended. That's not positive as we think about Tesla's dominance too in the Chinese market, where it's deriving some of its revenue. The other point that was positive here, which should be a positive for Tesla, but we aren't necessarily seeing that just yet, which is that the consumer is still holding up, that they're still seeing demand for cars, and that should be flowing through to all of the results, you would think. So the competition that an individual car maker is bringing at the dealership really matters still at this point.
Yeah, I mean, still to your point of competition overall, Tesla is saying, of course, we're going to try and put out a more affordable model then of its vehicles, right? One, Tesla hasn't always had the greatest track record with regards to delivering on time. So while 2025 is the muted date for this delivery, will that actually happen on time? Are investors betting too big perhaps on that supposition that because they're working towards this, that is actually a key element? Also, just with regards to what he actually said as well in that call yesterday, our future vehicle lineup to accelerate. I want to focus just on that word, to accelerate the launch of new vehicles, of new models ahead. So you actually hadn't planned for this. It wasn't initially in your purview. you didn't think you perhaps needed it, and you were just on this race down effectively in terms of pricing. So now you've had to accelerate your plans. Are you doing it efficiently? Are you doing it effectively? And if you aren't, are the cost, are the job cuts that you've now put forward, because Tesla said they're going to cut around 2,700 jobs in Austin, which is the headquarters of their EV make, right? So what happens now in terms of how good those vehicles then become?
Yeah.
You've always talked about a premium set of vehicles. Are you losing that completely then for Tesla right now? I just think it's an absolutely pivotal moment then for Tesla actually at this time.
I agree. We've got to push on though. We've got numbers now crossing from Roche. Big Pharma reporting first quarter sales, 14.4 billion Swissy. This is slightly above expectations. The analysts sitting around 14.35 billion in their expectations. So it is a beat on the sales number. Pharmaceutical division, first quarter sales up 2% at constant currency. Diagnostics division up 2% too. The results negatively affected by appreciation of the Swiss franc. That is crossing in the numbers today, although the company is backing its 2024 view as it produces the numbers today. So the latest as we see Roche update the market, the outlook for 2024 confirmed. The stock, as you can see for the last 12 months, we are seeing a reaction there that has been slightly weaker, down double digits.
All right, let's move on to the United States then, where traders have reduced their bets on Fed easing in the past months, now seeing fewer than 50 basis points of cuts this year. So less than two, that's according to LSEG data. Now, Frank caught up with Howard Marks, the founder as well as the co-chairman of Oaktree Capital Management, and asked what he expected the Fed's rate path to look like.
The U.S. economy is doing quite well. And so it's not clear that it requires stimulus. I mean, today's Fed funds rate of 5.25, 5.5 is a little bit of an emergency measure designed to cool off the economy and inflation. You know, one of these days we'll declare victory against inflation and the Fed will take rates down to something moderate and sustainable. I think that's in the threes. I think that, you know, from the period 09 through 21, the Fed funds rate averaged 0.5%, and it was zero most of the time. And my thesis is, you know, I've published a thesis under the heading of sea change, a memo in December of 22. And my thesis is we're not going back there to rates of 0 or 0.5 or 1. I think that is a unnecessary stimulus, and I don't think permanent stimulus is a good thing. I think that interest rates should most of the time be set by the free market, that is to say the negotiations between borrowers and lenders, as opposed to having a central bank tell people what the rate should be. So I hope we're going back to that climate. I did publish a memo in okay. January called Easy Money. It talked about the ills of rates being too low, and there are significant ills. And I think that we should not be in a permanent posture of stimulus.
I think you're referring to your op-ed in the Financial Times, say farewell to the corrupting era of easy money, saying that ultra low interest rates were unlikely to return. But now that we're in this higher for longer environment, I do want to ask you, where do you see the opportunities in the market? A big theme of your talk again was risk. I know you're not in the broader market, but higher for longer, it does impact a number of your business in the alternative space, real estate, private credit, private equity. So right now, where are you seeing opportunities for investors?
Well, you know, Frank, most of what Oaktree does is investing in credit. That means company debts or debts secured by real estate. And when you talk about rates being higher than they have been for the previous 14 years, that's an advantage that we enjoy today. Investors in sub-investment grade credit instruments, high yield bonds, senior loans, mezzanine finance, et cetera, today can get interest rates that approach or exceed the historic average return on equities, which is about 10%. And I think the ability to get equity type returns from investments that offer contractual returns in that vicinity is a tremendous advantage that we did not enjoy for that whole low rate period. So, we're very excited about the future for the things we do.
Elsewhere, JP Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon says the U.S. economy has been, quote, booming for a while, describing it as unbelievable. He said it appears the country is heading for a soft landing, but that he remains cautious. Well, not much caution on markets yesterday. Take a look at the trade that we had. In terms of the performance, much stronger for the major markets. For the Dow, four straight positive session. The likes of Goldman Sachs, a big driver, back to its IPO levels, May 1990, as it closes at a record most positive impact on the Dow. So certainly some firepower coming through from the major bank. In terms of the S&P performance, you can see it trading higher, up more than 1% in session, the best trading day since late February. So certainly gains across the board, and the NASDAQ too in play, much stronger, 1.6% pop. Tech stocks in focus, of course, as we get ready for a whole deluge of earnings from the sector. To the Asian markets, picking up on some of that green, and you can see it is very much falling across the region. Across to stocks in Japan, up 2.3%, reclaiming the 38,000 point mark. Stronger across on the Hong Kong market, the Hang Seng up 1.7%. Slimmer gains on the Shanghai Composite, and also on the S&P ASX 200, but still trading positive, Arabelle.
Well, Karen, coming up on the show, the CEO of Energy Group, RWE, warns that the green energy transition could become unaffordable. We'll bring you that exclusive interview. It's coming up next. Plus, Kering issues a stark warning for the first half as Chinese shoppers turn their back on Gucci. Take a close look at the numbers this hour. Also, later on, we'll be joined by the CEO of Sika as the company touts investment opportunities in two key Asian markets. You can tune in to that interview. It's less than 30 minutes away.
Ambition to me is about doing better.
I think ambition creates a pathway.
Best advice I can give someone starting off a career is don't have a career, have lots of careers, try loads of different things.
Talk to people and put your ambition out there.
I don't feel that I've hit peak ambition because it's a learning journey.
CNBC is where ambition meets opportunity. What does living ambitiously mean to you? Hear it from our CNBC anchors, reporters and global business leaders on CNBC.com.
The CEO of German energy group RWE has told CNBC affordability remains the key concern around green energy. He warns rising rates, lagging capital and insufficient infrastructure could make the transition to renewables unaffordable if businesses and governments impose new energy measures without the necessary resources in place. Steve caught up with Markus Kreber at the World Energy Congress in Rotterdam and asked how Europe can successfully make the transition to renewables.
I would say the current question is affordability. I mean, we have seen prices for especially renewable and clean technologies coming down over the last decades. But for the first time, what we now experience, the levelized cost of energy also for renewables going up. And that, of course, raises the question of affordability. The drivers behind it are higher inflation, higher interest rates in a very capital-intensive business, but also geopolitical tensions and supply chains, which doesn't function as well as they used to. But that actually hits every capital-intensive business. So the question is now, how can we continue with the transformation, with the energy transition, in a way that it's still affordable for the people, for the consumers, for the taxpayers? That is the key question. And the elements to that is, one is speed, and the other is technology, but also how open are we to different technologies? And here, other parts of the world, especially the US, are more open to technologies than Europe.
Okay, so both of those points. Speed, we just don't move quickly enough in Europe because we spend way too long on regulations. We spend way too long on permitting. On technology, we're not open to perhaps having the scale of these operations in our own backyard, whether it's Germany, whether it's United Kingdom, anywhere else in Europe. These are the problems, aren't they?
Yes, I mean, if you look at the European discussion is about which technologies are good and which are bad. Yeah, I don't care so much. I mean, what is important is that we don't release the CO2 into the air, and we are much too slow, especially on CCS, yeah, carbon management, especially the discussion in Germany, how long it took to get where we are today. And on speed, yes, where administration is blocking investments, we need to speed up.
But on certain things, we also need to slow down a bit because supply chain is not where it needs to be. Currently, we have very tight supply of any clean technology. And if we go too fast, it will become very expensive.
Let's get out to Steve for more. Steve, it is alarming that we're not just talking about coming up with good technology, but we're talking about profitability here and the viability of some of this technology.
Yeah, we just look, the technology's there, Karen. It's just that we don't want it in Europe, in it, in our own backyard. You know, name one of us who's quite happy to have a solar field near us or a green hydrogen project near us or whatever it may well be. And the truth is, in Europe, we've become a whole continent of NIMBYs. I'm pleased to say that's not the case in a lot of the other regions that I'm looking at here at the World Energy Congress, including Latin America, which is enveloping a lot of these new technologies as well. And with that in mind, I'm delighted to say that Andres Reboledo has joined us as well. He is the executive secretary of ALADE. Now, ALADE is the combination of Latin American energy organizations. It's an intergovernmental organization as well. Yes. So thank you very much indeed for joining us. I know you've especially got up early or come to the Congress early just to speak to us as well. Look, there is no broad brush Latin American transition story, but if there were one, just encapsulate it for us as well. Tell us a little bit about what's going on in this absolutely key region.
Okay, thank you very much for the invitation and to have the opportunity to present what is going on in Latin America and in the energy agenda. You're right that Latin America is a very huge continent with many countries. Our organization represents 27 countries. And we are very rich continent in terms of resource and energy resource. We have everything in Latin America. We have all technology that are playing the role in different countries. There is one common trend, which is that we are transforming our energy sector. We are living for the last year that our energy transitions, and we said that in plural because we have a different reality in Latin America. Also, we are very complementary, and that is a reason that we have trying for a long time also to have integration process, and in the energy sector, and we are the greenest region in the world in terms of the participation for the renewable energy in our generation matrix, and that is part of our maybe main competitive reason in order to move forward in other areas. So we are working in transform our sector.
You are resource rich. You're talent rich, as your colleague was saying to me earlier. You're mineral rich as well, but also hydrocarbon rich as well. And in countries such as Brazil, I spent a long time looking at the extraordinary projects, both onshore and offshore as well, the deep sea drilling and that as well. So is there still the impetus when you are so resource rich, hydrocarbon rich, to actually have the transformation?
Yeah, we have, of course, that our economy today is based in some way that in hydrocarbon sector like transport. Maybe one of the main challenges we have to face today is not only to decarbonize our electricity market, but also the entire economy. In that regard, the main challenge is to try to transform industrial sector and residential sector and transport sector. Mm-hmm. If you see, today, the transport sector represents around 35% of all the emission in the region. So we have to have an entire decarbonization. We have to make this step in order to incorporate more sustainable mobility in our region. And there are countries in Latin America that are incorporating electricity mobility, electromobility. There are countries like Chile, Costa Rica, Colombia that today they have in terms of public transport, for instance, buses, that they have made very important step in order to electricity mobility. And this part of our challenge today.
One of the other challenges that I can see from the outside is this resource-rich, mineral-rich, talent-rich region is attracting a lot of outside attention, certainly from China as well. The US has woken up to this now as well. It's woken up to what China is doing in terms of its desire to gain these assets on a global basis. The US is waking up in Asia. It's waking up in Africa as well. Is this leading to resource competition from, dare I say it, the likes of the superpowers?
Yeah. We feel that, in Latin America, because they are the main actor, the global actor, like the country that you mentioned, that they have been trying to participate in some way, for instance, in the critical mineral for the energy transition, because we are rich. 25% of all the critical minerals for the energy transition are located in Atlanta.
25% of yes. all the critical minerals are
if you take all the, as a basket, but yeah. of course, but if you see lithium, for instance, that we have 60% of the reserve, or copper, that also we are part of the main producer in the world. Mm. So in that regard, there are many countries that are very interesting in order to close the relation with
so
Latin America.
I feel like we're going back to the 70s here. Is that making, when it was the Russian stroke American competition for influence in the continent as well, is that making the Latin America, South America, Central America, is it making it a battleground for geopolitical tensions?
I don't think so. I suppose that the global actor want to take position in this new generation of energy agenda. One of the main elements is the critical mineral. Mm. And our own challenge is to try to incorporate more technology in this sector, not only produce it as a raw material, but also to make a step in and also to put some a possibility, maybe in the case of lithium, not only produce the lithium itself, but also batteries. Yeah. There are important debate in Latin America on how we can do that. And we can do that internally, but also with the foreign investment support, if I say so.
Yeah.
In that regard, we are very open to complement our resource, not only with Chinese investment and resource, but also with the American and European.
And that is a fascinating answer. Not only provide the resources, but actually add value to that product and then export it to a lot of these nations.
Absolutely.
That would add, obviously, a lot of higher tech GDP to these nations.
Thank you for listening to Squawk Box Europe Express.
For more market moving news, you can head to cnbc.com or join us again on the show with me, Steve Sedgwick, and Karen Cho, weekdays on CNBC.